Emeritus Series interviews continue this morning. On Monday, it was Glenn Pashard, Senator Dave Luchtefeld on Tuesday, Supreme Court Justice Ann Burke Wednesday, Dr. John Jackson yesterday, and Jesse White is joining us today, the former Secretary of State. First off, Jesse, morning. How are you, pal? Hope you're well.
Good morning, Tom. Glad to be on board.
I have a really, really crazy idea that I'm going to pitch you today. Are you ready?
Well, let's hear it.
The Netflix 10-episode series, The Jesse White Story, Secretary of Heart. The first episode, it's going to be 10 episodes. The first episode is a young man running down the basketball court, sweating feverishly, only the seconds left in the game. He takes that last shot. It doesn't make it. He's fouled. Something goes wrong. He's devastated. And up walks at the end of the game a man who looks very much like a preacher. Gives him guidance and advice about overcoming adversity, and then takes a very sharply folded $20 bill and quietly slips it into his hands. That's my first episode in the first scene. What do you think?
I think you're right on target. Now, that took place at Alabama State University, where I was a student. I played basketball, baseball, and I taught gymnastics. And after every basketball game, Dr. King would meet me and counsel me and slip me $20. I was a public aid recipient at the time, so it was, that $20 bill was like gold.
So, yeah, that's what I was thinking. 20 bucks then was a lot of money, and people think, well, you know, you're talking about a movie.
This it was legal then, but it's not legal now.
Yeah, not legal now, but, you know, it would be, a docudrama. I mean, now here I'm curious about, can you tell me something that Martin Luther King Jr. told you courtside that you carried with you from that time to today?
Well, he always reminded me of the importance of loving my fellow man and woman and never ever disliking anyone because of race, creed, or color. He also reminded me, too, that there's this big, wide, wonderful world out there. If we are to live in peace and harmony, that we have to make sure to become better educated, better informed, and then, of course, not only take on a job, but take on the responsibility that goes with it.
Another episode would be the young athlete who gets a contract to play with the Cubs, and then World War II.
Well, what happened was after I had graduated from college, I was asked by a fellow by the name of Bill Prince to go out to Wrigley Field to trial for the Chicago Cubs. There were pretty close to 300 baseball players there at the time. And as it turned out, they only took five, and I was one of the five. And I was scheduled to go to spring training the next year, which was 1957, at Mesa, Arizona. And as it turned out, 4 days before going to spring training, I was drafted into the Army. So instead of going to spring training, I ended up going to base training at Fort Leonard, Missouri. And then while I was there, I decided I wanted to learn how to jump out of airplanes. So I was transferred to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, went through jump school, earned my wings to 35 jumps, came back to Chicago, put my ball, bat, and glove, picked up my ball, bat, and glove, and went off to Mesa, Arizona to play baseball in the Cub organization.
What you failed to mention was who you served with, the 101st Airborne.
101st Airborne Division, 2nd Airborne Battle Group. To be very honest with you, Tom, what happened was, when I was in base training at Fort Leonard, Missouri, I received a notice from my college that I had to come back to Alabama State to walk across the stage in order to get my diploma. And so I indicated to my commanding officer my problem, and he said, well, we can take care of it. So they transported me to St. Louis, and I got on the L&M train and went into Montgomery, walked across the stage, and then they said, well, your way back to your base will be through Maxwell Air Force Base to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and then to Scott Air Force Base in Illinois and then into your base at Fort Leonard, Missouri. Well, a tremendous storm erupted while I was flying. This is the first time I had ever flown on an airplane. And so there were six parachutes on the floor of the plane. So I asked one of the crew chiefs if I could put on one of the parachutes. He says, well, why do you want to pull on the parachute? I said, well, I'm not going to, this plane looks like it's going to fall out of the sky. I'm not going to go down quietly. And so I said, have you ever jumped out of an airplane? He said, no. And I said, well, what are some instructions you would give me? And he said, well, you told me how to put the chute on, how to put the body position, and how to pull the chute, how to pull the ripcord. And so they opened the door of the plane, and we were over Birmingham, Alabama at the time, then on to Nashville. And at Nashville, the pilot said, tell the soldier to sit down. We're going to go toward Memphis, and we'll round Memphis on a northeast pattern and end up at Wright Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. And so I sat down, and then when the plane arrived at Wright Patterson Air Force Base, the lieutenant said, Private White, your flight is ready for Scott Air Force Base in Illinois. I said, Lieutenant, I'm not in any shape to go on another airplane. I said, where's the bus station? They said, well, no, we have a special plane for you. I said, no, I'm not going to get back on an airplane. Well, as it turned out, I got on the bus and arrived at my base at Fort Edward, Missouri. After I completed, after I arrived there, I'm walking down the base, and I see this fellow with this beautiful uniform on. I said, Sergeant, I said, what unit are you? And he said, 101st Airborne Division. I said, well, how does a person like me become a part of a unit like yours? He says, well, what do you have to offer to the 101st Airborne Division? I said, well, I'm a college grad. He said, we have a lot of college grads. I said, well, he said, well, is there anything else that you have to offer? I said, I'm a professional baseball player. He says, no, you're not. Don't kid me. I said, yes, I am. He said, prove to me that you're a professional baseball player. I said, I have my contract in my duffel bag in my barracks, and I'm about 3 blocks away. Let me go get it. So I ran to my barracks, got my contract, showed it to him, and he was beyond control. He said, Lieutenant Flynn would love to have you on the baseball team.
He was a Cubs fan.
I don't know. He was a baseball fan.
A
lot of the officers like to bet on the teams, in boxing, basketball, baseball. And so as it turned out, he said, Lieutenant Flynn would love to have you at Fort Campbell, but you have to go through jump school. I said, well, I'll go through jump school because I've been on an airplane before, and I didn't like it. So let me learn how to get out of an airplane the right way. So as it turned out, after basic training, I came back to Chicago. Then from there on to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, went through jump school. And after I'd completed, and I played baseball and basketball while I was there and jumped out of airplanes. And after I completed my tour of duty, I came back to Chicago, put my uniform in the closet, got my ball, bat, and glove, and flew off to Mesa, Arizona to play baseball in the Cub organization. So now you know the rest of the story.
Right. I said another good chapter. It's dramatic. I said Japanese. I made it older than I should have when I said that. Sorry about that. Hey, you know, what I find interesting in my movie that, you know, my Netflix, well, now I'm thinking Leap of Faith, Jesse White story. That's what I'm thinking for the title now. But the part I don't know much about, because I think about you in another context, you're the other Alton Giant. But it's not so much about heights, what you've accomplished. But tell me, you know, what about this young man who met Martin Luther King Jr., the man who jumped out of airplanes with the 101st Airborne? Where did he come from in Alton, and your mom, dad? What was your deepest roots?
I lived in a place called, an area called Dogtown. It's the bottom part of Alton, down where when it would rain, excuse me, you'd have to learn how to swim, or if you didn't know how to swim, you'd acquire the ability to swim. Right. It was really bad, and we used the outhouse. Things went kind of tough, so we decided that we wanted to relocate to Chicago. At 87, we moved to Chicago on the north side in the predominantly Italian neighborhood, where I learned to speak a little Italiano, eat the linguine with the calamari sauce, the babalucci, the pizza, just Italiano. And I worked for the Italian fellow by the name of Sam Aiello, and he helped me to become a better person while working for them, because I believe that if you speak someone else's language, eat their food, learn their dance, learn about their culture, it makes for a good relationship. And so I learned a lot, and he was a safety net for me. And then I played basketball. I went on to Waller High School and played basketball, baseball, and played the band and orchestra, played drums with a fellow by the name of Dr. Vonsberger, and then, of course, Russ Chapel and Bill Kipp were my baseball and basketball coaches. And after I had played basketball, I was an all-city basketball and baseball player. I was scheduled to go to Ripon College, and it wouldn't accept me because I didn't have a sequence in math. Lloyd said, we want you to have a sequence in math. Northwestern University said, we want you, but you to have a sequence in math. So Alabama State said, we'll take you. And sure enough, I went to Alabama State, Montgomery, Alabama, a segregated environment. First day down there, I got on the bus to bag some school supplies. And as it turned out, I sat in the wrong part of the bus. The bus driver became excited and wanted to put me off the bus. He said, there's a police officer on the corner and would have you arrested. So as it turned out, when we arrived at this Texaco gas station, the squad car was parked outside. He got off the bus and said he tried to hail the officer, and the car went through the red light, and so the officer went off trying to get the fellow who had gone through the red light. And so the bus driver got back on the bus, and as it turned out, we arrived in downtown Montgomery, and the people in the back of the bus were African-Americans. Asked me where I was from. I said, Chicago. He said, well, you don't act like that down here. You have to follow the rules, follow the guidelines, and otherwise you'll get arrested. So the next time I got on the bus, I went to the back of the bus. And then later on, while playing basketball and baseball at Alabama State, Rosa Parks was the lady who refused to move to the back of the bus, was arrested. And Dr. King at church said that he had been asked by the city fathers to lead the effort to desegregate the Montgomery transit system, and he was going to use a nonviolent means approach in order to bring that about, and that he was a student of Gandhi, and Gandhi was instrumental in bringing about the independence for the Indians from the British. So he said that Gandhi had an attitude that if things didn't go right with him, he wanted to make sure that he was able to establish a peace accord with the person who was, the other person. Well, the bottom line is this. He said Gandhi was the kind of person who would let you slap him on one cheek and he'd turn so he could struck on the other cheek. And I raised my hand. He said, Jesse, why are you raising your hands? I said, Dr. King, you know I'm from Chicago and we don't operate like that. He says, well, just follow the script and everything will be just fine. And as it turned out, through the efforts of Dr. King and others, we were able to desegregate the Montgomery transit system. African-Americans could sit anywhere they wanted to sit on the bus. And I just admire and respect Dr. King for his giving and caring spirit and for his leadership. And he made me a better person, and he made this world a better place for all of us.
Okay. Now, this takes me to my next point, my Netflix idea, right? I'm not sure which episode that would be, but I'm thinking about this story, and I'm wondering if it leads to the other one. 2002, Roland Burris is named by the Senate to Rod Blagojevich. You say no. All right, there's a showdown, literally. 2002, you, Roland Burris, the Senate, Rod Blagojevich, and the Supreme Court.
Well, as it turned out, Rod Blagojevich was the governor of the state of Illinois, and he wanted to appoint Roland Burris to replace Barack Obama for the Senate seat. I'd had a lot of problems with Governor Blagojevich because I found him not to be the most honest person I'd ever met. And so I said that if my signature was required to promote Roland Burris to become the next senator for the state of Illinois, that signature would not be forthcoming. And so, as it turned out, New Roland Burris was eventually promoted to become the senator to replace Barack Obama. But I never, ever established a good working relationship with Governor Blagojevich because I'm an honest person. I respect your word. I appreciate your honesty and your fairness. And he was none of those.
All right, now here's the interesting thing. This goes to court, and they say your Secretary of State's violated the law. He's required to submit that's what the document says. You didn't sign them. You said, okay, the Supreme Court says I'm required to submit the paperwork. Well, there it is, but you wouldn't sign it, and you said, I never will. And the Supreme Court sided with you saying, well, he submitted the paperwork. It doesn't say he has to sign it.
That's exactly right.
You know, and this literally, no, which you talked about, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, and, you know, passive resistance, No, I did what, but I'm not going to do it. Now, here's another chapter for the Netflix story, Jesse White, the story, a 10 episode. I don't know if we can get it all in one season. When you ran for Secretary of State 2002, you won all 102 counties, 2.3 million visitors, the largest margin of victory in 25 years. But that's not the only thing you did. As Secretary of State, you were the longest-serving American in that office in U.S. history. Voter support, the largest margin in state 25 years. When you look at this, the longest Secretary of State office, there's a whole series, there's an whole episode right there on those just two small items from your life.
Well, when I was a war committeeman of the 27th Ward, 12 of my precinct captains indicated that they wanted me to seriously consider. I was a Cook County Recorder of Deeds at the time, and they wanted me to consider running for Secretary of State. I indicated that no African American had ever been successful in running for that office. Going back to what I served for 16 years as a state lawmaker, a state representative, and I served with Speaker Madigan, and as it turned out, I became a war committeeman, and 12 of my precinct captains asked for a meeting. And I said, what is the nature of this meeting? He said, well, we want you to seriously consider running for Secretary of State. And I said, well, no African-American had ever run for Secretary of State and had been successful. He said, well, we think that you have the right stuff in order to bring that about. So I said, what is your suggestion? He said, well, we think you should be with Speaker Madigan. So I called Speaker Madigan and asked him for a meeting. I had served 16 years in the General Assembly, so I knew him well.
Now, you just glossed over this, and I want to hit this. You listen closely to what Jesse just said. House of Representatives from 1975 to 1993 before he started thinking about these other races.
Yeah, a district that was 83% or 85% white, 10% black, 5% others, and I served for 16 years. So, as it turned out, I asked Speaker Madigan, do I create a problem in my desire to run for Secretary of State? He said, yes, you do. I said, can you elaborate on it? He said, well, all of the people who are running for the various offices in state government, the customs offices, are from Cook County, and we need someone from outside of Cook County. And I said, who do you have in mind? He said, well, Senator Penny Sevens. That's who I know. I know her well. I served with her in the General Assembly. And he said, or Glenn Pichetta. I know Glenn. You're a former congressman from Southern Illinois. I said, those are two good choices. And so he said, there's a fellow by the name of Tim McCarthy. I said, who is Tim McCarthy? He said, well, Tim McCarthy is a former Secret Service agent who took a bullet for President Reagan. I don't know him. I don't trust him. I think he's a Republican. I said, hey, great. So I went back to my 12 captains. I indicated to them by conversation with Speaker Madigan. They said, well, we're going to circulate your petitions anyway. I said, well, you go right ahead, do what you want to do, do what you have to do. I'm enjoying being the Cook County Recorder of Good Deeds. So as it turned out, about a month and a half later, they called me back into the office. They said that they have something they want to show me. I said, well, show me what you know, present your documentation. Well, he said, well, you see these three stacks of petitions? Those are Penny Sevens' petitions, and they have been roundtable, which means that they will not be acceptable. And you see these signatures? These are all yours, three stacks. Mm. And then I want you to see this next stack of petitions. These petitions came from a fellow by the name of Tim McCarthy. I said, let me see them. Well, Speaker Madigan, Congressman Lipinski, Tom Hines, and Ed Burke had all fixed their signatures to these documents or had circulated them. And so I asked for another meeting with Speaker Madigan, and I indicated to him that Tim McCarthy was from Cook County and he was a Republican, and you had engineered an effort to get him on the ballot by circulating his petitions. So he says, well, I think that I will be able to retain control of the House and gain control of the Senate with his efforts. And based on your qualifications, I don't think that you will measure up. So I would hope that you would tell your friends, your neighbors, and people who support you not to waste their time, tell them to take their ball and bat and go home. You will not be involved with the selection. I said, well, Speaker Madigan, I served with you in the General Assembly, and you never had to worry about where I was when it came to your agenda. I said, but when it comes to this effort and this measure, you're talking to the wrong person. You have a good day, sir.
Yeah, right. Turn away.
So I went back to my captains. I said, I'm in it to win it, and I average between 14 to 16 events every day and traveling all over the state of Illinois. And as it turned out, I won by about 150,000 votes. And the next morning, I received a call from my office. I was in the office, and my secretary indicated that there was a visitor. I said, who's that visitor to be? She said, well, Speaker Madigan. I said, well, show the gentleman in. He stepped in and hugged me and shook my hand, congratulated me, and gave me a check for $10,000. I said, Speaker, I said, thank you very much. I said, why are you giving me a check for $10,000? He said, well, your next opponent is going to be a fellow by the name of Val Salvi, and we want to make sure that we give you an early start. I said, well, thank you very much, sir. So we became our relationship became reestablished as a result of what I did for his candidate, Tim McCarthy.
We've only got 60 seconds left. We're speaking with Secretary of State Jesse White. So my movie idea, you like it?
I like it, but I want to share with you one other thing that I do. I was a gymnast as a kid, and I have a tumbling team called the Jesse White Tumblers, and we've been around for exactly 65 years. I've had over 18,500 young people to come through my program. At last count, to our knowledge, only 20 have gotten themselves into trouble with the law.
All right, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about this for a second, because this is interesting. First thing, I did not know you started the Tumblers in 1959. I thought it was something you did Secretary of State's office. I swear I didn't know, and I can't explain it. But, you know, the first scene in my movie, Martin Luther King Jr. helping you on the court, and then I think about you and what you do with the Tumblers, and I can't think that you upscaled Martin Luther King in a very utilitarian way, and you just covered it. Out of the thousands, only a handful, two handfuls, have gotten in any type of trouble. I mean, if this is a hallmark of Jesse White, what a great hallmark, thousands of years, and you took what Martin Luther King Jr. gave you, and you multiplied it.
Yes, we traveled to these kids all over the world, Zagreb, Croatia, Belize, Israel, China, Tokyo, Japan, Hong Kong, Honolulu, Ionica, Hawaii, Big Ten, NBA, NFL, you name it, we've been there, we've done it. And we have 30 kids in college, and we give each one about $8,000 a year toward their education. And every year we have a trunk party. We give about 500 kids a truckload of school supplies when they're going off to college. As I indicated before, when you get it, you give it back, and you must do something good for someone every day, and you must figure out a way to love your fellow man and woman and never ever dislike anyone because of race, creed, or color. That's how I run my life.
All right, so how do you think, what should be the thing on the end of the screen that would encapsulate your life to tell, as I said, this is a Netflix 10-episode limited series. How would you want your movie to end? What would you want people, a title card at the end with all the numbers of people you've helped and the records you've set? I mean, what would you want there to be on that last card?
Something like this, that I love my fellow man and woman. I've never forgotten it. It's called Give Back. And you must figure out a way to do something good for someone every day and love your fellow man and woman and never dislike anyone because of race, creed, or color. And always, always look up and aim high. The only time we want you to look down in life is to tie your shoes.
Secretary of State Jesse White, the Emeritus Series on News Radio WJPF. Jesse, thanks a ton, pal.
Tom, as they would say in my neighborhood, you the man.